things to do. So let's start here with me and you. Gonna take a little time. Let's see what we can find. Oh, come on, walk with me, talk with me. Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. In a new year, it's 2013, and we're celebrating of sorts. So we're enjoying the beginnings of 2013, knowing that we did just fine through 2012, especially for those who were concerned about December 21st and all that that had been charged with. You notice that I say it was charged with it. It wasn't there. It was something that a lot of people had put a lot of energy into. And, well, quite honestly, nothing really came of it. And we're kind of glad about that. Although there would be those who would argue to the contrary only because of some of the things that have been happening since then, whether it be on a governmental level or what have you. But I'll tell you, we have a new year. Everybody looks at it as a fresh start. And I think that that's a very appropriate to do so. It is a fresh start for everyone, a clean slate, if you will. So we're going to take a look at your slate in a euphemistic manner, a metaphorical manner. And also we're going to take a look at the slate as it's concerning the planet Earth and maybe even in context the United States, maybe California or your state or maybe we'll get a little closer to home. We'll see how that goes. It's good to be with you. We're here every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, although this is a special time of broadcast today. As a matter of fact, the coming weeks into February, we're going to be on Sundays at 3 p.m., so make a note of that. And another reminder, too, that these interviews sometimes run longer than what you hear on the radio or on A2Zen.fm. What does that mean to you? That means that you have to go to Richard Dugan, the radio show's page at richarddugan.com, and you have to listen to the interview in its entirety. It could be an hour, could be an hour 10 minutes, could be an hour and 15 minutes. Really kind of depends upon how I was feeling at the time of the interview and whether or not we needed to continue on. I think today's interview is going to be no exception. You're going to have an opportunity to hear the after view. So you'll need to go to richarddugan.com. And again, normally we do come your way on Saturdays at 3 p.m. February, it'll be Sundays at 3 p.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com, newspress.com. We do rebroadcast on Sundays at 3 p.m. at a2zen.fm. That's a2zen.fm. And we also archive the programs, as I've already made you aware of. Today, we're going to be talking again, we've had him on before, with Howard Martin, Executive Vice President of HeartMath LLC, HeartMath.com, and we're also going to talk about the GCI Steering Committee. We're going to talk about GCI in general, that website, what it's all about. Howard, I want to again thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to have you and folks from your organization on the program to talk about this, especially after the first time we had you on. And I cannot get it out of my mind, Howard. You shared with us on the first program that we did with you about the CGI, the Global Coherence Initiative, and these instruments that you have positioned throughout the world. You've had them positioned going back before the turn of the century, I believe, but I know that it was prior to 2001, September 11th. And you shared with us that you saw a spike in the data that was being received, the energy levels that were out there. I can't remember if it was like an hour or a day prior. It was as if the entire planet knew something was about to happen. We didn't know what. First of all, again, thank you for joining us. And can you kind of go back and elaborate on that?
Sure, Richard. First of all, thanks a lot for having me back. Good to be with you again here in 2013. You're right, we survived 2012 just fine. You have the distinction, either dubious or not, of being my first interview of 2013.
I'm honored. I'm honored.
So here we go. So what you're alluding to was things that were observed around 2001, you know, September 11th, 2001. What I have to preface this and say is that nobody was doing formal experiments on that day.
Yeah.
Because nobody had any idea anything was going to happen. So there were no formal experiments being done, but certain things that were measuring in general did show some interesting changes. So there's some inference there, some strong inference that something was going on, although we can't say scientifically that it was. A couple of things were happening that were observed. One is that there's another organization, an organization that we're familiar with and that we work with, called the Global Coherence Project. And that's Dr. Roger Nelson, Princeton University professor that has the random number generator system set up around the world. And these random number generators are devices that aren't used for this kind of research. What they are is they're little computers that randomly churn out numbers and symbols, and they use them in research for things like statistical analysis studies and things like that. But a long time ago, he observed that his random number generator in his office would suddenly become different. It would be producing less randomly. More ordered numerical and symbolic patterns would come out of this thing. He didn't understand why, and he still doesn't understand why. But he wondered if humans were and machines had an interface that could be affecting that. So he set a network up around the world, and he's been observing changes all the time that happen in this random number generator network, and he's been able to correlate those changes at times to things that were going on in the world that were important. Very often, very positive things, like the start of an Olympics and things like that. Or another one he observed was Princess Diana's funeral. And there's been just dozens and dozens of these things that he's observed changes, statistically significant changes in his network at the same time that something important was going on in the world. But the day that he saw the biggest change that he ever saw was 2011, you know, September 11, 2001, excuse me. Never before had he ever seen anything close to that, and he hasn't seen anything close to it since. And what you're alluding to is the fact that the random number generator network began to change about 2 hours before a plane actually hit one of the world center one of the towers.
Mm-hmm.
2 hours before the system began to change. Then he saw this huge statistically different pattern from the system. It's a global system. He has 60 of these things around the world. Now, that's interesting. No experiment was going on at the time, but it's an interesting observation. The difficulty with that one, however, is that no one still understands how it's possible that mass human emotion could be affecting a network of random number generators. That causal link has never been made, and I doubt that it ever will be anytime in the near future, let's put it that way. So another observation point, however, was government weather satellites, space weather satellites. There are two that the U.S. government has run by the National Oceanographic and Aeronautic Administration. And they're parked in stationary orbits above each of our coast. And what they're doing is looking at things like solar winds, solar radiation, cosmic rays, all these things that would be considered the weather of space. They also look at the Earth's geomagnetic field, the power in the Earth's geomagnetic field. And that field changes constantly. It's influenced by many, many things. Certainly, the solar activity influences the geomagnetic field, for example, in very dynamic ways. But we have a graph, I show it in my live presentations, and it shows the pattern of these two geosynchronous satellites, and they look normal sort of oscillating pattern. And then right at 9 a.m. on 2001, it spikes dramatically. This huge power spike happens in the geomagnetic field. And then the days after that, the field is a lot more disrupted than it was in the days before. And when you see this graph, it's like, what in the world is going on here? So I've talked to researchers and scientists and asked them, the ones that have looked at this, were there any other things going on that they've been able to link to these changes in the geomagnetic field? Was there anything happening in the space weather, for example, that could have caused this? And the answer I get back repeatedly is no. They've looked at it all. There's no other explanation for it. Now, because nothing was being done on a formal experimental basis, we cannot say that the emotions being felt by the billions of people in the world who were affected by and observing 9/11 had anything to do with this change in the geomagnetic field. But I do find it interesting, and when you put those two things together, it creates an interesting link. I'm not into pseudoscience. I'm not into phenomenalistic things necessarily. So the way I do position it is it's interesting. I look at it and I go, wow, that is really interesting. So with the Global Coherence Initiative, the technology we've developed is trying to take this type of research further and to be able to do it from a more research-based point of view. The sensing technology we have measures changes in the geomagnetic field and the ionosphere, another one of the Earth's energetic fields. And we're observing these fields, looking for changes and anomalies in the patterns to see if we can correlate that with mass human emotion and things like that. So it's part of what we do here at HeartMath, just trying to bring some of the scientific expertise that we have into this this new millennium in a way that can begin to put meaning and context around some things that that many people believe and that many people find interesting.
Well, it certainly is, and I'm curious if anybody has taken a look at the same basic kind of data surrounding December 21st, 2012. I mean, I know it's after the fact. Nothing of significance, as far as I'm aware, happened anywhere on the planet that would have even come close to what you've talked about in terms of September 11, 2001.
It'll be interesting to see. I don't have any information yet, say, from Dr. Roger Nelson on anything his random number generator network may have observed. When I've talked to our researchers, they said, look, it takes a while to analyze any kind of data like this. These fields that we're measuring, geomagnetic and ionospheric fields, are very complex fields.
Mm-hmm.
And so it takes a while to be able to break these things down. And so there's nothing that I have right now here on our date of interview that can say that there was something unusual that was observed. You're right in the sense that there was nothing, you know, phenomenalistic that seemed to occur on that day, even though there was a buildup towards it, a tremendous buildup.
Yeah.
And I think it's fortunate and unfortunate in a way. I think a lot of people had expectations, and I think people may be disappointed now that they didn't get some kind of a symbolic, you know.
Yes.
Registration that something occurred. I mean, there was, of course, two camps on this. There was apocalyptic people that felt there was an end of some time occurring, and then there were people who were looking at it as the beginning of something, and that there would be certain things that would be, observed that would indicate this new beginning. And yet there was just nothing. In a way, you know, I think it has to be looked at like this, and this is the way I approached it the whole time: is that yes, it was an important day. Yeah, there were planetary alignments, and yes, the Mayans did in their calendar on that day because of where the planetary alignments were, for one thing. So it was an important day, and there was a buildup for a decade at least about this. So the way I saw it is that whether the Mayan calendar thing was relevant or not, or any of the other things that were being sort of aligned with and associated with that date, there were many, many millions of people around the world who did make it a special day, who put out more consciousness, more love, more care, more intention that day.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that because of that, there was something important that did happen. Now, these kind of changes that people want to see, they don't happen overnight. And this is not an era, in my opinion, where we're going to see, you know, magic unfold in front of our eyes. It's a period of self-initiated, self-empowered effort, you know, in a very dynamic and heightened co-creative, place in history.
Mm-hmm.
It's an exciting time. It's a wonderful time. It's a lot going on, and changes are happening very quickly. But these things take time. They're cycles.
Mm-hmm.
They don't happen in one blast.
Right, right.
You know, I'll give you an analogy that I got the other night. You know, HeartMath founder Doc Childry, who, you know, as you probably know, and if your listeners know, he's not a public figure. He doesn't go on radio interviews like I'm doing with you today and things like that. But Doc is a very, very intelligent man. And I meet with him all the time, and the other night we were talking about it, and he was saying there's lots of facilitation, you know, for us coming from Universal Source, and it's increasing all the time, and it's creating changes and creating a dynamic, changing, shifting world that we're in. We have to access it through what we do, and we can't escape that. It's just the way it is. There's no way around that. We're not getting zapped into the next level of planetary unfoldment. Yeah, we earn it.
Right.
But the analogy he used was, he said, if you had a pitcher of water and you were trying to pour it into a bottle, if you took that pitcher and you just dumped it upside down, some of the water would go in the bottle, but most of it would go all over the floor.
Mm-hmm.
He said, so if the universal source or whatever the facilitation that would be associated with something like December 21st happened all at once, we couldn't take it.
Yeah, yeah.
Some would hit the bottle and some would just be a waste.
Yeah.
So it has to be consciously poured into that bottle.
Yeah. I know that
and
there
we,
are.
I know, and we earned that.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that what we're doing as humanity, what we're doing as a, together and individually, is we're widening the top of the bottle.
Well, that is one idea, to widen the top of the bottle. But the bottom line is the size of the opening in the bottle is what it is.
Right.
You know, now maybe through what you're describing, the folks are doing, that's kind of going to that analogy, that's maybe that is what they're doing. They're working to widen the bottle top.
Exactly. So more can happen quicker.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, unfortunately, I saw many, many people, you know, as I traveled and spoke last year a lot, like I usually do. I probably did 75 radio shows or teleseminars or webinars last year. And this buildup was huge. And I saw people who were very intelligent, very well-meaning, very loving people who really, really wanted something to happen to give them a validated, you know, sense. And it didn't. So part of my message to everyone this year is it's okay. There's change going on. It's happening as fast as we can take it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
Just because we didn't have, you know, an off-planet intelligence land in the, you know, the front yard of the White House doesn't mean that there's not a lot going on, you know.
Yeah. Well, I know, too, that there are those of us here in the United States who, looking back now, having seen what happened on January 2nd, and even to those of us now who have started to see our paychecks roll in, are thinking, damn, I wish something had happened, you know, because, but by the same token, I would then take a look at France and a couple of people thus far who have decided, oh, I have a better solution. I'm going to change my nationality and go that route. But then they're only dealing with a physical aspect. There's so much more to this world than the physical, and changing your nationality or your residence or what have you isn't going to change who and what you really are on the inside. And that's really what we're talking about here. I've even heard it said, Howard, that the ascetics, the monks, those who are living the monastic life primarily, not exclusively, are the ones that are sort of holding. They're the glue that's holding this world together, so to speak. Maybe they're also working to at least keep the top of the bottle open as wide as it is, because some people maybe some people feel that the bottle top is actually narrowing. And so, without these people out there to do that, if they suddenly all stopped their meditation and their prayer and their intercession, that things would be happening a lot faster, but not in a good way. And
well,
I find that an interesting observation. What are your thoughts?
Mine would be a balanced perspective on that. First of all, I want to appreciate everybody, including the monks and the ascetics that have been doing that kind of work for a very long time. The prayers and meditations, all that stuff really does count. And, you know, I mean, I do my share of that. And I always have, and I think it's an important contribution that I try to make. It's a form of service that I think is essential. And the monks and the ascetics and the people that do that are holding a certain frequency, you know, or a certain pitch in the energetic field environment that's useful and facilitative. If they were to quit, the shift still goes on anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
And what's most important is not so much what the ascetics are doing, it's what we individually are doing moment to moment, day to day. What attitudes are we holding? What's going on in the privacy of our own consciousness?
Mm-hmm.
How often are we shifting a long-standing emotional pattern that we know does not serve us into one that at least neutralizes things? You know, how often do we choose to be more accepting and more connected rather than to separate ourselves and judge? You know, what do we do in terms of acts of care versus just, you know, sort of mechanically walking through life? Do we appreciate past when things are just going our way, or can we appreciate, you know, things in general? These are all the kind of consciousness shifts that seem so simple and have been talked about for thousands of years, but they're the ones that are making the most difference. So whether it's an ascetic who's doing a meditation, putting out a certain energy, or whether it's a single mother trying to raise four kids who holds a great attitude,
mm-hmm,
in the middle of whatever challenges she comes with, and also has time to try to make sure she's caring for her neighbor down the street. To me, that's just as powerful as what an ascetic does in terms of the energetic contribution that it makes. So there are millions of people, many millions of people around the world who are living their lives differently, who have got a consciousness that's moved on in a certain way.
Yeah.
And so that shift has already happened. And that's the good news. That's what's moving and propelling things forward now in the direction that it's going. It's a good direction. Sure, we're going to have things that pop up, you know, more momentarily or over shorter periods of time, like, you know, the physical cliff, like, you know, the presidential elections, like, you know, violent things at Sandy Hook or the storms, those kind of things. If we look at those things and isolate in on them too much, we begin to miss the bigger view.
Yeah.
The bigger view is that things are moving and accelerating in consciousness and moving our world in a very, very positive direction, but it's taking time. It's got to take time for it all to play out. And any time you have that much change happening that quickly, there's going to be some chaos associated with it as well.
Yeah. And that's a perception, too, because I've watched some of these documentaries on how the universe was created and how it moves and flows and ebbs and so forth. And they talk about the concept of chaos. And I know there's a theory surrounding chaos and that it is nothing more than a perception. And when in reality, there's perfect order going on in what we are perceiving as chaotic.
It just depends on what bandwidth of perception we have, really.
Exactly.
You know, and we never know a lot of times until we step back and see that something that looked chaotic at one time may have been something that was really perfect in another view. You know?
Yeah. With this kind of science that we're talking about here, it's next to impossible, I would guess, for those conducting the experiments, and we're talking on a global level here, not to influence the outcome because, well, they're being measured too, right? I mean, it's not
sure.
Like they're wearing a tinfoil hat and a lead-lined suit so that their energy waves aren't being detected by these numeric generators.
Well, that's true. You know, I'll give you another example of that. You know, in the movie What the Bleep, you remember that movie?
I do, indeed.
You know, the part of that movie that attracted the most attention was the changes in the water crystals reported by Dr. Emoto.
Oh, I remember that distinctly.
Right. Okay, so there's another guy you may have heard of named Dr. Bill Tiller, William Tiller.
Mm-hmm.
He was in What the Bleep as well. He was a professor emeritus in material sciences at Stanford University for a number of years, decorated, you know, academician in that world, and he went into more of consciousness science, and he's done a ton of work with water. And I know him. And so when the movie was out, and I was asking him about that, about the water crystal thing that Emoto was positioned around Emoto's work, he said, well, let me explain it to you this way. He said, first of all, he said, the inference made in the movie that we can focus on some water when we're sitting in a Denny's, you know, and change it is wrong. He said, there was a lot of factors occurring in those experiments, one of which would be there had to be a coherent field environment in the lab itself for that to occur.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, to your point, something else could have been influencing the outcome of that experiment. It's not just as random as it was laid out in the movie, right?
Right,
we,
exactly.
We all do that every time we focus on charging our water. So that field environment in that particular lab at that particular time produced those particular results. But it doesn't mean that it happens all the time.
Well, I know that as a kid growing up, I used to sit and why I used to think this, I don't know, but I used to think that if I blinked twice quickly enough, that blink, those two blinks would be identical, okay? Because I did them so quickly. And then I began to broaden my perspective and I began to realize that it wouldn't make any difference how fast I was able to blink. They would never, ever be identical because the universe is in constant motion, let alone, you know, the water flow on the planet and the air and all of those different elements. Everything is constantly in motion. Nothing will ever be exactly in the same position ever again in eternity to where you would ever get exactly the same results. And I think that that's something that I think we have begun to realize, and this is what Teller was telling us in regards to these experiments in particular, but just in general, that when you do an experiment, it's very, very difficult to get exactly the same results the next time for that very factor.
Exactly. There's a lot of factors in this, especially that type of experiment.
Yeah. But it is intriguing.
You know, for people, they want validation. That's why everybody's looking to science. One of the things I'd like your listeners to hear today is like, enjoy science. You know, let science unfold and show some things and validate some things and prove some things. Hell, it's a big part of heart math, right?
And that's what I want to get into when we get back. I want us to go more, I want to define heart math, what it was created for, what it has become, and what the future holds. Because I know that our listeners are aware of the whole aspect of what the heart is, not just the physical muscle, but the heart in terms of where it resides in the human body, what it not only represents, but what science has actually discovered that it is. So let's come back and talk about that. I'm Richard Dugan. Howard Martin is my guest. I can say it a lot easier, I think, if I pull it up here. Howard Martin, the Executive Vice President of HeartMath LLC. He's also involved with the Global Coherence Initiative. He's on the steering committee. He's a member thereof. And we're going to talk more about heart math as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story. Stay right where you are.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Telling you that understanding is what it's about is part of Tell Me Your Story here on Saturdays and in February Sundays at 3 p.m. We do stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com and newspress.com, archiving the programs on the Richard Dugan Radio Show's page. And we encourage you to go to that page and listen to the entirety of the interview. You may not get it all on the radio program or the A to Zen broadcast, because we may continue talking far beyond what normal airtime and broadcast time would provide. That's the beauty of archives. And we want to talk now, Howard, about heart math. Tell us about the creation of heart math. What was the inception?
Well, inception goes back with Doc Childrey, our founder. He's well over 40 years ago now. Doc and I have known each other that long, actually. Doc was the kind of guy who had a lot of awareness. He had, his own spiritual unfoldments and things that brought him to some very unique places in terms of his own consciousness. And he believed that his mission was to put together a simple system that people could use to empower themselves through the changing times that he could see coming. And so he took a very heart-centric approach to that, because what he discovered in himself was that, heart has been talked about for thousands of years, but it was more than even people realize. It was a magnificent intelligence everybody possessed. It was intuitive. It was the kind of intelligence that was where our core power came from, really the core of our authentic self, the type of intelligence that could look out for ourselves and for the whole, the kind of intelligence that could give us the ability to move beyond our mediocrity, all these aspects of ourselves that were really associated with heart. So he set about, in a very patient way, without ambition, without trying to put together an organization or write books or any of that, just an understanding of this intelligence of the heart and a livingness of it. And I met him 40 years ago, and that's what we did. And we lived in eastern North Carolina, myself, Doc, and others, and we didn't really have an ambition to ever be an organization. Hell, I never thought I could be an author or a speaker or ever be on anybody's radio show. That was just not even in my thought patterns. And we worked on ourselves in obscurity like that for 15 years. Along the way, we'd read books by other people, and we'd sometimes seek them out and met some interesting folks out in California and became friends with them. And eventually, after a long time of friendship, at their encouragement, really, they said, look, what you people have done is amazing. You've done it in such a unique way. You've got something that has to be shared with the world. Why don't we try to put something together and see what we can formulate what you've learned into something that can be shared. So in 1990, we moved to California, and we partnered with some people out here. In 1991, we officially started the Institute of Heart Math, our nonprofit. We had no investment dollars. We lived very, very poorly. We just marshaled the resources that we had. Doc began to write some books. The books led to training programs. We started doing scientific research to understand if heart was more than a blood pump, and to look at how heart and brain and rest of the body communicated. We attracted many interesting researchers, including very famous ones like Carl Prebram, Joe Kamaya, some of these pioneers of major research in the world. We're just intrigued with what we were trying to do. We ended up doing training programs. We wrote more books. My book came out in 1999, published by HarperCollins, became a really great-selling book for them. We continue to get research published in mainstream scientific journals all around the world. Lots and lots of things happen. We develop technology to measure heart-brain communication. It just goes on and on. And so today we are a system, a school of thought, so to speak, that people can learn, tools and techniques and technology we have to support that really does what Doc wanted it to do, empower people through these changing times, to give people connection to this amazing intelligence that they have called the intelligence of the heart. So today we're still in California, Northern California. We employ about 100 people now. We operate all around the world. Our products and services are sold in over 100 countries today. And we're still growing. I mean, there's a lot more coming from us and a lot more for us to do in terms of our mission to really, bring a system to people that we feel is needed right now. And all this has happened because we started out back years ago as young men and women. We focused on first things first. We took a heart-centric approach to it. We learned to truly listen to and follow our hearts, not in some mushy, sentimental way, but in a very pragmatic and dynamic way, and we built what we built. So I'm proud of what we've done. We're one of, I'm sure many organizations out there doing wonderful things in the world. We feel like we're doing our own part in our own way, and, that's a long answer to your question, but that's what HeartMath is and a brief history of how it became.
In terms of your background that gave you the impetus, if you will, to even want to be involved in something like this?
It was an inner stirring, I guess. I mean, my background at the time was very different. I mean, I was a musician is what I did when I was young. I was a rock musician, a drummer. And that was my passion. I started playing the drums when I was 9 years old, and that's all I ever thought I was going to do or wanted to do, and I got good enough at it that I was playing with people who had records out, when I was in my early 20s. And I actually stayed in that world until my early 30s. But I also, for some reason, became interested in spirituality, not in a traditional sort of religious sense, but in terms of, exploring consciousness and trying to be a better person and things like that. So in the middle of all the rock and roll stuff and, the lifestyle associated with that, and there was another thread running in me very strongly. And a lot of that had to do with Doc, who was my friend who I'd met when I was in the music business, who's helped me to understand things about myself, about life, and about consciousness. And so I pursued both paths in a way until it reached a certain point. Not overnight, it sort of built up to a certain point where it just wasn't possible, Richard, for me to have both. I had to make a choice to go one way or the other. I couldn't just stay in the stimulation of the rock music world and all that went with that and really, really make some significant moves and grow in my inner self.
Isn't there a certain aspect of music that requires you to really come from the heart?
It can be, and certainly I try to approach it that way, but, music can be a lot of things depending on the person, right?
Mm-hmm. That's true.
A lot of it's just pure ambition-driven.
That's true.
It doesn't have a whole lot of heart in it. It's just, I want to be the star, But yeah, it's different. But yeah, music for me had a lot to do with who I am as a person today. I don't play anymore. I'm not associated with music in that way. But certainly starting out as my first passion and doing it for so long, it imprinted me with a certain, certainly in my personality and how I approach things in life. I have no regrets about what I did in music. I learned so much about people and about life, and I had a great time in the middle of it. Yeah, it was dramatic and stressful and challenging and all those things, but when I look back at it today, and I was actually listening to some of my own music when I was riding in my car back over here to do this interview, and I was thinking, you used to do that, that's pretty good, can't believe you could pull that off. Wonder how drum lick that was, thinking back about it, it had a fun feeling to me.
Yeah.
Not like trying to relive the nostalgic past. I don't need that. My present and my future are amazing.
Yeah.
So I don't need to go backwards in time, but it was fun just to listen and say, well, that was a time period in my life, and I did that, and I've got no regrets.
I think, too, that a lot of folks, sometimes they do a self-evaluation of their past, and sometimes they may have regrets. Oh, gee, I wish I hadn't have done this or that or the other. But the reality is, you wouldn't be who you are today. And to forget about the regrets, embrace all of who you were, because it's all of who you are today. And if you want to be more proud of tomorrow, then make some new choices today.
That's right. We're in a time period for that.
Yeah.
You know, where it's this shift is real. This shift in consciousness is an accelerated time for us to grow.
Yeah.
And the world is changing, and we're in the middle of it, and we contribute to it, and we're also affected by it, and it's going to go on whether we want it to or not.
Now, you said something earlier I thought was a rather interesting and actually somewhat profound. You made the comment about December 21st, 2012, as there are some people who are disappointed that something didn't happen. And I have to wonder, not that I have access to any of these random numeric generators, but I have to say that I have been aware of sort of a semi-disconnectedness, it's not quite the word I want, but it is almost like, almost sort of a deflation of sorts. Not that I was, because I've been telling everybody, hey, think of Y2K, that's what's going to happen, calm down, relax, enjoy the ride. And yet I still have this feeling, in spite of my general optimism over life in general and the things that are coming, it's like something's not right here. You know, it's like it's not quite on the rails perfectly just yet. You know what I'm saying? And I have to wonder if maybe I'm picking up on that disappointment of so many who were really expecting some galactic or interstellar or even spiritual experience or thing to happen of a monumental nature. And it's like, you didn't get what you really wanted for Christmas.
Yeah, right. Well, I think we're in a time when things are sort of energetically less stable anyway.
Yeah, okay.
It's part of the growth process. I mean, there's a lot of stirring going on right now, you know.
Yeah.
If people listening right now are feeling like, wow, I've just felt a lot of stirring inside myself lately, a lot of things have been coming up for me and all that, hey, join the club. Don't feel alone. You can at least put that and take that one and check it off the list. I'm alone in this, because it's going on everywhere.
Everywhere, yeah.
And these things go through modulations. We're in a very amplified and accelerated time period now. I think in a month or two, it'll ease off for a little while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Then it'll crank back up again and ease off. It's like a rhythm and flow,
right,
this whole thing. So the game of it is, how do we learn to go and catch the rhythm and the flow of these things? And that's part of what I teach and part of what I talk about. It's like, you know, we got to move at the speed of balance through all of this.
Mm-hmm.
There's an ease that we have inside ourselves. It's also one of the gifts of the consciousness in universal source. It's a feeling of ease we can tag inside ourselves. It isn't just a laid-back, take-it-easy, and that's not what I'm talking about. It's a smoothness and a flow that allows us to sort of go through all these changes and these ups and downs and all this stuff sort of spinning around inside of us and outside of us with more ease and more poise and more grace.
I've heard it described as the swing of a pendulum, and that our goal of sorts is to work our way up the pendulum to the pivot point, so that we're still on the pendulum, but we're not going to be affected by the swing left back and forth nearly as much the further up the shaft we go to the pivot point.
Okay, that's a good analogy. Yeah,
and so to that end, you know, maybe what we need to do is try to find a way to do that. Do you and HeartMath have some techniques, practices, if you will, that we might be able to talk about here in that context to teach us, to help us to, using that analogy, work our way up toward the pivot point?
Yeah, well, I can share something with you in just a minute with you and the listeners. It's something we can do simply on, you know, radio show format.
Okay.
The HeartMath system is a whole system of tools and techniques that are we teach in things like our Heart Mastery courses, which anybody can take. I'm not just trying to sell a Heart Mastery course right now, but look up heartmastery.com. Anybody listening that wants to learn heart math, you can learn this from your home and still participate in our live discussion groups and all of that. So it's something people can do. But, yeah, there are techniques designed for that. A couple of, you know, sort of conceptual things that I want to lay out to people right now as suggestions, if I may, is during these times there's two things I'd like you to consider working on. One would be patience. Be more patient. Let these changes unfold. Don't try to push too hard right now. We've all done a lot of work on ourselves, you know, to improve and to, you know, be better human beings and all of that. And there can be this sort of drivingness right now behind it all. We've got to change. We've got to change the world right now. We're in these time periods when we got to do it or else and all those sort of things. But take that tension out of there right now. It's not serving anything. Dial that back some. Have more patience and let things unfold in a certain rhythm and flow. The second thing I'd like people to consider doing is to try to work on having more compassion for yourself. Don't be hard on yourself right now. It can be easy to see our faults right now and things popping up and going, oh, my God, that's this and that's that, and I thought I'd already taken care of that. I've been working on this forever. Those kind of thoughts can come in. When they do, it's okay. It's natural. But try to have some compassion and say, you know, I've worked on myself a lot. I'm doing the best I can. Things are really okay. And just have a little heart talk with yourself and put out some kindness and some care and some compassion for you. Make it a gentler process right now. In other words, the momentum of the shift is carrying us as fast as we can go anyway. We don't need to push any further. Mm-hmm. We just need to find the rhythm and the flow with it and then consciously co-create within that. That's my suggestion for people who are listening today.
I know that after the devastating shootings in the East, there was a wonderful public service announcement that started coming on encouraging people to do like 20 or 26 acts of kindness for each, representing each of the individuals that had been killed, and thinking what a difference that would make in the world if even just a million people did 26 acts of kindness. 26 million acts of kindness.
That's right.
That's going to change the world. Because those kinds of things, literally, and I'm sure they're on the internet as well, that kind of stuff goes out globally. And so you have 7 billion people. And, you know, and again, it continues to spread, continues to spread and spread and spread. And so I think those are the kinds of things. I also think, too, of there was a movie some years ago called Pay It Forward. The same kind of thing, the same concept, if you will. Taking an act of kindness that was given to you and paying it forward instead of paying it back, you know, a payback to the person who gave it to you, move it forward to someone you don't even know. Those are the kinds of other of things, too, that they don't always necessarily get you out of yourself, because it isn't really the point. You want to stay in yourself, but you want to shift that energy. You want to shift that that focus a little bit more. Look at as we've talked before. Look at the big picture.
That's right.
You know, or at least a larger version, a larger portion of the big picture, at the very least.
Well, I think all these things, as I mentioned earlier, these little acts that we're doing moment to moment, day to day, they really count the most. Now, you know, being kind all the time is what's important. But as I mentioned earlier, I start with being kind to ourselves.
Yes.
You know, we got to do that first. I mean, I think people are pushing pretty hard right now, and there's a lot of change going on. A lot of things are up for people right now. Just be easy on yourself. Let things unfold. Have that patience and that self-compassion, and it'll be okay. So that's one thing I wanted to just reinforce with people right now, because there's plenty going on, and we don't need to make it any harder on ourselves than, you know, than it can be already.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, and I would even have to take that advice myself. There are times when, in the last few weeks, when sometimes I question, gee, I wonder if I should have had that person on the program, or I wonder what that person was really trying to get across to me on the street the other day. Although I do have to look back, I had an incident with a homeless person. I was on the phone sitting on a bench on the street, and the person just got into my face and just started saying some of the most obnoxious things. And I didn't get upset. I was a little concerned, but I just kind of let him say his thing. I'd seen him before, and I just kind of used my left hand, and I kind of did what I could, not touching him, you know, keeping boundaries and everything, but just kind of shooing him away like an annoying fly, saying, okay, move on. You've had your say, you've done your thing, and you can go now. And I just, you know, it's very interesting how people are reacting to one another as well. I know that, you know, I've seen various news stories where individuals, they commit a particular action, they take a particular action, expecting a different result, and they get exactly the same result as every other person that's done that same thing. You know, they've committed a crime, and they don't expect the police to come after them, and they're so surprised when they get caught. It's like, how many more of these stupid criminal shows do you need to see to know that this doesn't work? You need to do something else that's a little more productive.
Sure. Well, you'll see a lot of different behaviors as the shift picks up, and, you know, the stress gets to people and they begin to act very differently and things like that. So I think that's where we have to put out more care and more compassion and everything in general, really.
Mm-hmm. So the future for HeartMath, I'm curious as to how, because I know that science has changed in the last 20 years since the beginning of HeartMath. How has science changed the way in which HeartMath, shall we say, does its work or conducts its business, if you will?
Well, certainly in terms of our business, the development of the M-Wave technology, which measures the changes occurring between heart, brain, rest of the body, was a big deal for us, and that started in the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really been a significant change for us in terms of what we offer the world and in terms of how our business models work as well.
Okay, so can you talk to us a little bit about this M-Wave? I'm always curious when things like this are labeled, how they were discovered, and you know, what was the impetus? A lot of times, some of these things they're discovered almost by accident.
Well, we've been looking at, you know, how can we look at changes occurring in between heart, brain, and rest of the body. We wanted to be able to measure that. We knew it was occurring. We had experienced that in our own personal work, but we didn't have a way of measuring it. We found a technology that was used in cardiology, which was being used to look at cardiovascular health, called heart rate variability analysis, measuring the beat-to-beat changes in our heart rhythms, our heart rate. So not just heart rates, measuring the time between heartbeats. What we found was is that, and what the researchers that have been looking at this had never bothered to look at, was that one of the main things that influenced heart rate variability changes was our emotional state.
Hmm.
That when we were experiencing strong negative emotions like frustration, anger, impatience, things like that, it would throw the heart rhythms into a very jagged and chaotic pattern, as you could see through the heart rate variability analysis. We also found that when people were experiencing emotions that had been long associated with the word heart, like love and care and compassion and appreciation and things like that, that the heart rhythm pattern would immediately shift and become more coherent and ordered. We took that further, and we began to identify a state in the body when those heart rhythms began to go into that sort of pattern associated with the positive emotions, where all the body systems lined up with the rhythmic beating pattern of the heart. It's a state called coherence. Coherence is a high-performance state where we're really acutely aware. We're operating from a place that's much more centered and balanced and emotionally poised. It's a healthy state. It's a state where our mental faculties are enhanced. A lot of things occur in the coherent state. So we were able to identify that state and put measurement around it and give it value and context. We took all that scientific understanding, we put it in a consumer device, a little handheld unit called the M-Wave, that's spelled E-M-W-A-V-E, and it's used to measure heart rate variability and changes occurring in the body as related to how coherent we are or not.
Okay.
And we've sold those all over the world. in everything from, you know, tens and tens of thousands of people using it for their spiritual practices, to corporate executives, to celebrities, to Olympic athletes, you name it, and, you know, it's been used ubiquitously. Now, where is this going today? Everything's moving to mobile. Our team is going in the Consumer Electronics Show 48 hours from now, where we'll be launching the M-Wave on iPhone.
Oh, wow.
Called Inner Balance Trainer. It'll be out and available to the public in February. But it's now a different experience. When you put it in mobile, then it's not just the same thing we had in a handheld device. Now it looks different, it feels different, the colors are different, the things we do with it are different. The whole thing is now moving to a mobile platform for iPhones and iPads. And then from there, it opens up into a portal, which we'll be developing and expanding upon as we go, which in HeartMath becomes accessible 24/7, anywhere, anytime. So a lot of the delivery processes that we have today, how do we train people? How do we give people experiences? How do we motivate people? How do we encourage people? All that is moving for us now into the mobile space. And that's where we're moving, both in terms of our science and technology, as well as our business models.
Now, you've raised an interesting item here. Now, you said that when one is in that coherent state, not coherent, but coherent state,
yeah,
that it generates certain attributes of our physiology. I'm curious as to how it affects our physical condition in terms of healing, whether one has a cold or an infection or something along those lines, a disease, even cancer for that matter. Has that been measured yet?
A lot of health changes occur, Richard, in the coherent state. And yes, physicians and health practitioners of all kinds help their patients by getting them to use things like an M-Wave to engender more of the coherent state in their body to help accelerate and facilitate healing processes.
So there is a huge benefit here.
Yeah, the huge benefit, and there's research going on all the time, hospitals and things doing research, cardiovascular health, emotional health, diabetes studies, you name it, going on. It's a very exciting field for us in terms of looking at the physiology from that perspective. Now, the physical benefits are one thing, and they're important, but the psychological benefits are huge as well. Helping people get through things like anxiety and depression. I mean, there's a huge amount of work being done with HeartMath and with and without our technology in the field of mental health. Helping people through some of these mental emotional conditions that are so prevalent in society today. So there's a lot of health related activity associated with HeartMath. It's about 14,000 to 15,000 health professionals in our database alone who in some way utilize HeartMath in their work.
That's extraordinary. It speaks a great deal to the potential for our future. And the future survival, if you will, of our civilization, because we're in need of some real help right now. I mean, we could go down a laundry list. I'm sure you've done it on numerous occasions of the conditions that ail us as a civilization globally.
That's true. It is a tough time, but it's also a progressive and exciting time. So I think it's a matter of what choices we make and how we can try to, again, find that flow and that balance through it all.
Exactly.
So I don't want anybody to ever lose, you know, hope or lose heart right now. Just know that there's going to be a lot of things fluctuating. Try not to over-identify with anything one way or the other. Stay in the middle.
Yeah.
Stay up the shaft on that pendulum you talked about, you know.
Exactly.
What about, let it unfold.
You talked about both the physical and the psychological aspects, which are certainly profound. What about intellectual, maybe an increase in intellect or an increase in understanding of some of maybe like, you know, quantum physics or being able to solve complex problems that someone may have been having problems with? Have you noticed any increase or improvement in that regard?
Yes, plenty.
Wow.
The biggest winner in the coherent state is really the brain. When the signals from heart that influence brain change, the brain function is enhanced and improved. It opens up the higher perceptual centers in the brain, the neocortex, executive decision-making centers. All that is enhanced and opened up when we enter the coherent state. taken down into studies. We've done a lot, and there have been others that have been done, too, on cognitive changes. We've done things like studies on reaction speed time, which would be related directly to brain function, right?
Right.
Showing improvements in reaction speed time pre and post people entering the coherent state. Another one we did, a big study, was we recognized a long time ago that part of the reason that kids did bad on tests a lot of times was not because they didn't have the information inside themselves. They may have studied their brain, you know, their little butts off to get there. And somehow they did bad on the test. Part of the reason for that is that their brains shut down because of the anxiety associated with taking the test.
Oh, yeah.
So we did a national study done, sponsored by the U.S. government through a grant. It's a bipartisan-sponsored project. We did it around the country looking at the effects of HeartMath coherence-building training and the M-Wave technology on test scores and performance, and we showed dramatic improvements in that area.
They say that the longest 12 inches is between the brain and the heart. I'm curious if this M-Wave is literally reconnecting. I mean, that's really what it's all about, isn't it? Reconnecting the heart with the brain? Because if you're using your heart, if you're making heart-centered decisions, that information, if you will, is going into the mind, into the brain, for that purpose. Am I viewing that correctly?
Yeah, you got it. That's exactly what's going on. It's beginning to connect more with, to synchronize heart-brain function at the physiological level, which engenders positive emotional states at the psychological level, then opens us up more from that integrated, synchronized state into more downloads of spirit into our humanness.
Wow.
That's what it does. And if you go back to the beginning of our talk today, you know, that's what we said, that's what Doc said he wanted to do, put together a simple system to help people empower themselves through these changing times, and he took a heart-centric approach. The last statement I made explains why we took a heart-centric approach.
Yeah.
It starts with heart. Heart influences brain function. Heart brings in the ability for us to then download more of that intuitive-type bandwidth that comes from spirit when it meets humanness. And that's what we're trying to engender, is a new level of intelligence, a practical intelligence, intelligence that we already have inside ourselves that we can then bring to the surface that gives us the ability to navigate the changing times we're living in now with more poise and more grace and improve things like our physical health in the process.
The Howard Martin of the 1980s could never have imagined that the Howard Martin of 2012 would be speaking on these things, right?
Never.
Never. Never.
Absolutely.
Even
no,
was
no
wasn't a concept
of it at all.
Yeah. So let me ask you, who is Howard Martin?
I'm just a little guy trying to do the best I can to improve myself each and every day, and I really mean that. I mean, continuous growth is at the core of what I try to do, and then I'd like to do what I can to help others do the same thing, and hopefully, when it's all said and done, leave a decent legacy behind that said that wasn't a bad little dude. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. And though, as I've asked this question of my guests, also having spent an hour talking with them about all of the various subjects that we've talked about, and having answered this question in numerous different ways throughout the hour, what is it that you specifically hope to and want to achieve through the work that you're doing?
Well, I want to see a fundamental change in how this world functions. I want to see more cooperation, less separation. I want to see things begin to shift in terms of how things like wealth is distributed. I want to see hunger begin to end. I want to see, the end of wars, a lot of things that people want. I do see the possibilities of that unfolding, and then in my lifetime I'll see enough of that to know that it's happening, And I really believe that we are creating a new world. A new world is emerging in front of us as we speak. And it is a world where people are desiring those type of things more. They want that more. And I want to see that begin to manifest. I want to see some of this stuff straighten out. We live in a world now where we have a lot of duality. We have a lot of new trying to come in and old trying to hold on. It creates a point of tension. In my lifetime, what I want to be able to see before I leave this planet is I want to see that tension begin to release itself some. I want to see the new type of consciousness begin to take hold in a way that begins to eliminate some of these old paradigms that are just outdated. And I want to experience that. I want to feel it, and I want to see it. And it doesn't mean it completes itself out. It doesn't. But I already see it in a certain way, so I'm already fulfilled in many ways by the life that I've already had. but I want to see more of it. And I want to be able to go, you know, out of this life whenever that's time, to be able to say that I feel good about this world and where it's going, and I feel good about what people are going to experience in life, and then it's going to be a lot better than whatever's been before.
And even if you could, would there be anything that you would change about your life at all?
Yeah, I'm sure there would be if I sat back and thought about it. I mean, obviously, I think that, you know, in some ways it can be at peace with exactly with the way things are now, like you talked about that earlier, why I have regrets, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
About things, and I agree with that. It's time to move forward, not to look back at the past and everything. But I guess when I get to a self-critical place about what I'd like to be different about my life, sometimes I think that, yeah, I've done a lot, and I can be happy with that. But look at the opportunities I had to do more that I didn't take advantage of.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, how much more could I have done if I didn't get sidetracked by this or sidetracked by that? You know, and those kind of things. So, I guess you know. It's an interesting question that you propose because it isn't time to go back into that self-reflection and have second thoughts about things. It's time to take today and make the most of it and really jump on tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
In looking back at it, there's no major things that I have in my life, like I wish I hadn't gotten married to so-and-so, you know what I mean, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Nothing like that for me. It'd be more along the lines of, yeah, I've done a lot, but I could have done more.
Executive Vice President of HeartMath, Howard Martin. The website is heartmath.org. That's heartmath.org, and we encourage you to check it out. And we encourage you to get in touch with them. Find out about this M-Wave device. I think this is fascinating, especially when you start talking now, Howard, about its being available on your phone, on your smartphone. I think that's pretty cool. I look forward to it not only on the Apple, but also on all of the other devices as well in months to come. And we look forward to talking with you again in the coming months to hear about some of the progress that HeartMath, as well as the Global Coherence Initiative, have made, and maybe even we'll get a little reading on what happened on and or around December 21st, 2012.
That would be great. And Richard, thank you again for having me so much on your show. I appreciate it, the opportunity to be with you and to have a chance to share with your listeners.
Oh, you're very welcome, and I thank you again. Again, the website is heartmath.org. Howard Martin has been my guest. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story. New paradigms for a new world, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next Saturday at this same time, love to Lal.